Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Dan Foster of National Review Online is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Dan, it's not often that I've been able to say the Republican debate I watched was a good one, but I have to say that it was. I think despite some efforts by the CNBC moderators to mix things up, perhaps in some less than ideal ways, for the most part, we got good policy discussions. And that is a credit, considering some of the debates we've seen in the past where Anderson Cooper and others basically not only let it turn into a food fight, it's pretty clear that they wanted it to turn into a food fight. And also, while many conservatives may differ on the merits of Mitt Romney, I'm certainly one of them. I am very reluctant to back Romney. I'm also reluctant to back any of the others. But in terms of his performance last night, if he in fact emerges as the consensus nominee, the de facto nominee, whatever nominee, he looks like he's ready for prime time, and among the candidates that are believed to have a real shot at the nomination, I think he kind of stood out in that way. So overall, it was a good night, I think, for Republicans getting their ideas out there. They did a good job of criticizing the Obama administration better than they have in recent debates. And again, if Romney's the nominee, at least stylistically, he's ready for the stage.
Yeah, I basically agree with all that. I think that this was the most policy-oriented and detailed of all the debates. I think the moderator's questions, it's a low bar considering the other debates, but I think the moderator's questions were the best that they've been. I even wasn't especially annoyed by Jim Cramer, which is a rare treat. I agree. I think the general takeaway was that, you know, Gingrich and Romney really shined. And also Ron Paul. My take on this last night watching it live was that Ron Paul, I mean, obviously he sounds his best to a mainstream conservative when he's talking about domestic policy.
Sure.
And as I pointed out in a little corner post, he's got this streak of gradualism and Burkean gradualism that I didn't really know he had in him. He's talking about end the Fed, but not right away. Phase out student loan subsidies with tax credits. Slowly devolve Medicaid to the states over time, transitionally. So I think, you know, he gets this rap as a radical libertarian. He certainly wants an end state that is a very, very small, very narrowly tailored government. But he's much more gradualistic in his methods than I think I gave him credit for, and a lot of people give him credit for. So he sounds really good on domestic policy. But, you know, that's also a function of the fact that he wasn't asked about foreign policy like he has been in some other debates. Gingrich, as usual, is the most well-read, articulate person on the stage. I thought, and I know some of my colleagues here agreed with me, that he's just got to scale back the contempt a little bit. I mean, he's just oozing contempt for everyone around. I mean, he's the smartest guy on the stage, but what's annoying about it is how thoroughly he knows it. And every time he answered a question, you know, I swear it was always in year X, obscure federal official or member of Congress Y passed Bill Z, and everything's been terrible since. I mean, I swear he said, you know, in 1923, the Deputy Undersecretary of the Interior made this awful ruling, and, you know, and the housing market hasn't been the same since. So he's got this genius for these egg-heady, incredibly nuanced and detailed answers. But you know what? He knows as well as anybody else how you win televised debates. He did a fairly good job of doing it last night. So when he's sitting there criticizing the moderator for asking him to explain his healthcare policies in 30 seconds, it reads as a little false to me. I mean, Newt, you're the master of communicating effectively in sound bites. That's, you know, that's why you're such an effective political mover and shaker. So I thought that was a little, the gentleman doth protest too much. But overall, he was great. Romney, I would agree with you, unflappable and amazingly still really untouched on Romney care. I mean, nobody would have guessed, I think, how much he's been able to skate on this issue. And I'd agree with you that he'll be a fine debate partner for President Obama. But look, I don't think President Obama is much of a debater. I think, again, talk about low bars. I have a lot of affection for the man, John McCain, but not much of a debater. And those debates were among, you know, some of the worst we've seen in a while. There hasn't been a really great pair of debaters running for president of the United States in nearly my entire lifetime, whether it's Kerry or Gore. And we all know about, you know, President Bush, not his strong suit. We haven't really seen Lincoln-Douglas-style debates. but certainly I think Romney's capable of playing at Obama's level.
If Jim Cramer brought his sound effects, maybe that would have added a little bit even more drama.
Sell.
Exactly, right? The snorting bowl doesn't get played as much as it used to anymore. The only thing Romney really, I think, might need to explain further from this last night debate was his attitudes towards China and its currency. It came off pretty aggressive. A lot of people may like that, but it's certainly going to come back and talk about it again. And you're right, especially on RomneyCare, how other than one debate for about 5 minutes, he really hasn't taken a lot of punches on that. So we'll see how that plays out the rest of this primary cycle and how Obama goes after that, since that'll be very interesting, if in fact he's the nominee. Another factor of this debate, it seemed, first of all, that the moderators seemed to be in a consensus that Mitt Romney was going to be the nominee, because it seemed like he got about three times the questions as everyone else. And one person who didn't get to talk a lot was Rick Perry, and he's probably wishing this morning that he talked even less, because the thing that everybody's talking about this morning is this, when he's talking about downsizing the federal government.
It's three agencies of government when I get there that are gone. Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see.
But you can't name the third one?
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, commerce, and let's see. Oh, I can't. The third one, I can't. Sorry. Oops.
Dan, I think you put it best in your corner column yesterday after watching the debate. If there's anything that Rick Perry should remember, it's the Department of Energy, because energy independence has basically been his answer to everything. It's almost his version of 999, and somehow it slipped his mind at the one point where it actually made sense.
I know you had that clip, and I have a very low personal threshold for awkwardness. I was dreading having to listen to that again. It was painful enough to watch live. I don't think this in and of itself would be a fatal gaffe for him, but just, you know, the reputation as a debater he had going into this, I thought that was, there's no way that that's not going to leave a major mark, and it could be definitive. I feel bad for the guy. I know a lot of us do. I mean, anyone who's spoken in public or done media gigs like the Three Martini Lunch knows that occasionally you forget a point, you freeze up. As Rich Lowry said, his worst nightmare is saying that he has 3 points and then forgetting the third. And we always seem to do that sort of thing. But yeah, his reputation going into this thing was such that he really didn't need a gaffe like this. So I think it's going to be really problematic for him. One thing I'm curious about is two things. I think it was Mitt Romney who offered the EPA a little bit later. It's not in that clip, but when he was grasping for it again, I think Mitt Romney said, "Is the EPA?" And Perry just grasped onto it. Yeah, it's the EPA. Of course, it wasn't the EPA that he was talking about. But I got to wonder if Romney was being how sneaky Romney was being there. I mean, it's one thing to remind Perry of his own, you know, policy preferences. It's another to purposefully tell him the wrong agency. I wonder if Romney's that sneaky and that smart. Also, I don't know if it was one of the moderators or I couldn't pick up who was saying it, but when Perry was oohing and umming and aahing, somebody in the background can be heard on a mic saying, "Oh my." I wonder who that is, because that was a little bit of a breach in decorum as well. That's just another little element that Rick Perry didn't need, one of the moderators saying, "Oh my."
Yeah, I didn't know if that was one of the candidates. It almost sounded a little bit like Newt, but it's hard to tell exactly who that is, because as we all know, Newt Gingrich would never forget a detail. His encyclopedic memory, as you mentioned before. On to Martini number three now. And Martini number three historically has been either just the ridiculous, the hilarious, the bizarre, but every once in a while we have to pause and focus on the absolutely appalling and outrageous. And this is a story that's not gotten a ton of attention in the past couple of days, but it started by saying that the military at Dover Air Force Base, which is where a lot of the remains of fallen soldiers and other members of the armed forces come in for processing back to their hometowns and funerals and so forth, that some parts were missing. Now we find out that the remains of some of these soldiers, whether in whole or in part, were cremated and actually distributed in landfills. This goes from 2003 all the way up to very recently, so you can't pin it on one party or one administration or the other. And, you know, it's just a disgusting thought that that would happen. Who knows how it started, but the fact that it continued for that long is very troubling, obviously, for the families and anyone who obviously appreciates the dignity that should be associated with the returning of remains of U.S. soldiers. Hopefully this is over now, but the idea that this was even happening is really, really disturbing.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I think the people who put the least amount of emphasis on the trappings of ceremony and ritual are probably the war fighters themselves, the kind of folks who go over and fight and die for the rest of us. But it's crucially important that we don't forget that sort of dignity and we don't miss anything when it comes to honoring them and really just, you know, displaying the kind of reverence and respect for what they do. As you put it, it's appalling and outrageous. The three people who responsible for running the Air Force mortuary have been, their careers have effectively been ended over this. You know, that seems appropriate, whether they were directly complicit in it or just negligent in allowing it to happen. Unfortunately, this is part of a longer trend going back to the things that we found out about the Walter Reed Medical Center. This is part of a trend of a society that's not really taking care of its warfighters the way that we should be. And over 6,000 dead in Iraq and Afghanistan is an appalling number. But during the Second World War, orders of magnitude more war dead than that. And so you'd like to think that we have the resources and we have the care and compassion and the planning in place to make sure that every single one of those 6,000 plus American dead are treated with the respect that they most certainly deserve.
That's absolutely true. And apparently the new policy is that any partial remains that are not able to be identified are again cremated and spread at sea, which is certainly more dignified than what was happening in recent years. So at least steps are being made in the right direction after that horrible stretch of a really, really bad policy. Dan, really hate to end it on such a depressing note today, but hopefully we'll have more positive things to talk about tomorrow. Have a great day. We'll talk to you then.
Thanks, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join Dan and I again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.